For the Health Committee on Education for Tuesday, February 5th, 2008. Members, welcome. It's very good to see all of you here this afternoon. Members, chair, and audience, please turn off cell phones and Blackberries so we don't interrupt the sound system while we're in session this afternoon. Thank you for your cooperation. I believe all the committee members know each other. We don't have any new members on the committee. Official welcome to Representative Huffman. Now that we're officially in session, so the official to the House Education Committee. We are joined today by Matt Davis, who's our committee assistant. Good to have you here, Matt. Thanks for being here. Members, for this afternoon, our goals are to adopt our committee rules and do hearings on our three bills, at least the public hearings on each one of the bills that we have before us as a House committee. And so with that, I am going to ask if there is a motion for the adoption of our committee rules, which you should find before yourselves in the packet.
Would you like to open
an organizational meeting? Sorry, the committee administrator reminds me I need to open an organizational meeting of the committee. And
need a motion first.
Okay. I will look for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the proposed rules for the 2008 special session.
Thank you. Vice Chair Kopp has moved that we adopt the committee rules for 2008 special session. Is there discussion? Representative Huffman.
Yeah, Chair Ruckley, thank you. Section 13, a number of my colleagues waxed eloquent yesterday in session regarding the absence of minority report, and it still concerns me, so I can't really go along with that portion of it.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion?
Yeah.
Representative Lim.
Thank you. I'd like to echo the message concerning the rule number 13. So 31 members has to be approved for any minority report. I don't agree that. But since we passed in the House, that they are willing to support at this time. But I just want to state in the record that I not approve of this procedure.
Thank you, Representative Lim. Representative Greenlick.
Mr. Chair, is there any need to have item 13 in our rules, since we operate under the rules of the House, and the rules are very explicit from the House perspective? I was wondering why we need to have it in that, if it causes concern whether it needs to be in these rules at all. If you might want to ease a minute and check it with first, it would be useful to me because I'm going to be facing with this in an hour anyway.
Mr. Greenlick, I would be happy to do that. We'll stand at ease. Representative Greenlick, thank you for the inquiry. After consulting with the chief clerk, it is allowable for us to remove Rule 13 from the House Committee on Education's proposed rules for the 2008 session. Given the feelings of members of the committee concerning that rule, as noted, it will obviously remain in the House rules, but it will not be there in front of you in our House rules. So I would entertain a motion to strike rule number 13 and renumber. I believe that the clerk said I could, at this point, entertain a motion.
We need an amendment to the motion.
Amend the motion.
Yeah, I, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenlick.
I move to amend the motion in front of us to delete item 13 from the committee rules and renumber 14 and 15, respectively 13 and 14.
Representative Greenlick has moved to strike, to amend the motion to strike rule number 13 from the committee rules and renumber rules 14 and 15 to 13 and 14. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair, shall we see if the motion maker would accede to that change in the motion?
Thank you.
Yes, I do.
Vice Chair accedes. Any further discussion? Vice Chair Kopp.
Just clarification, so then if two members of this committee vote no on a bill, do they have the opportunity to do a minority report under the conditions of under the House rules?
Under the conditions of the House rules that we adopted yesterday.
Thank you.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Lin. If we strike out all number 13, then there's no provision at all for the minority report. Well, I think we should keep some part of it instead of striking out all of it.
Representative Lim, that's a good point. I believe from my discussion with the clerk, the minority report would still, process still be in place given the rules of the House, which supersede the rules of this committee.
Okay.
Am I correct on that? Thank you. Okay. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Vice Chair Wisnant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Representative Greenidge's recommendation. I think that delete 13, but I think we do have to be concerned of some reference or some to a minority report. I'm trying to think about all the other committee rules that we've had under a normal session, and it should be referenced that we have the right to follow minority report. I don't know, and I just voted against the same amendment earlier today. I would hope we'd standardize our rules for committees, and going to have one committee that doesn't have a minority report paragraph in it and one does. So we probably should be consistent throughout the chamber, and it should reflect whatever is, the House rules are. So I guess I would ask the chair to consult with the clerk to see if there's some other way to state this. Is this going to be I appreciate the representative's suggestion, but I think you need to have some reference to minority reports.
Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah, this is the only item among the 14 that simply restates a House rule. And it seems to me that makes it superfluous. Which would be the other 14 items are all things that specify our behavior under the House rules. And, of course, we're always with the House rules. I mean, it seems to me it simply stated in the report that we'll follow the House rules on minority reports. That seems superfluous.
I invite our chief clerk to come up. And if you'd be so kind to identify yourself and advise us on this particular point. I'm so amazed that Representative Crummell has missed so much fun thus far.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Ramona Kennedy, and I'm Chief Clerk of the House. In response to sort of how the model committee rules are developed, it is true, sir, that these model rules have been forwarded to each one of the committees, and for consistency's sake, I'm sure the hope on the leadership's part was that they would all be adopted so that everyone's dealing with the same set of rules. However, it is also true that the exact same language that you find in your committee rules under number 13 is stated in the House rules. I will say that during session, House rules do not necessarily go into depth like number 13 does here during the regular session. It does say that you can have minority reports, that it takes two members who have voted against the committee report. However, the detail of how those minority reports were developed and the timing of those minority reports were only encompassed in committee rules. That's why in the regular session you had number 13 that laid out all of those additional parameters that and timelines around the filing of a minority report. This set of rules is a clear duplication of what's in House rules. There's other provisions, and I don't have them in front of me, and I didn't come with my rules, but there are other statements in your House rules that also are stated in your committee rules that are also stated in the House rules as to the precedence, what comes first. It will be, the Constitution, it'll be the House rules, and then it will be Mason's. Also, the requirement of what it takes to get a bill to the floor on recommendations. Some of those are also reiterated under sections 8, I think, 15, and 20 in the House rules. So I think it is the pleasure of this committee. I think that whatever the will of this committee is, that you lose nothing by deleting 13. However, if you want to be consistent with all the other committees, then I would leave 13 in. Certainly your you know, it is the committee's decision.
Thank you. I appreciate that information. Are there any questions about Chief Clerk?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Cremel.
Thank you. Can you tell us, thanks for coming down. Can you tell us,
actually, I'm coming up now.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You're coming up now, aren't you? Anyway, can you tell us, since this has been, touted as a supplemental session, experimental session, and other words put to it, why are we putting special session rules into this session instead of, and acting like it's a special session that might add, that might last 1 or 2 days as opposed to 4 weeks? Why are we putting rules like this in, instead of basically following the same rules that we had in regular session in 2007.
Representative, I'm going to ask the clerk to respond, but I'm also going to make sure the conversation stays particularly on our committee rules, and I don't want to go back into the debate of yesterday.
I'm sure
you can understand that.
Mr. Chair, I'm not intending to take us there, but the thing is that these rules are not the same rules that we adopted in 2007, and I'm just wondering why it is that we're not adopting as committee rules the same rules, nor are these rules that we adopted during the interim in, I believe it was September, the first time we met.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, as you know, I'm the Chief Clerk. I serve all 60 members of this body, of the House of Representatives. These rules do not belong to me. I'm only your parliamentarian. They belong to all 60 members of the House of Representatives, and it is the decision of the 60 members yesterday as to what those rules would look like and the crafting of those rules. I only was advised on helping draft them, not unlike how council helps you draft measures, but the content clearly is not anything that the clerk should or will get involved in, particularly as to the rationale behind them. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I'm going to back whatever my vice chair wants. I think he wants to make a statement like Representative Greenridge did here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I appreciate what Representative Greenridge is trying to do. I'll be voting no on his amendment and ask that everyone else on the committee vote no, too, on the proposed amendment, friendly amendment.
Representative Greenlee.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I put this forward as a... I wasn't happy reading the article in the Oregonian this morning about our inability to work together and the fact that there weren't any goodwill gestures as a part of that. I put this forward as a goodwill gesture under the assumption that it wouldn't force minority members of the committee to vote in opposition to what's viewed as a friendly amendment, hoping to make it friendly, and if there is opposition, as I just heard, I withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Greenick. And I think we're all fine with that. Looks that way. Then we're going to entertain the...
Point of order.
Representative Cremel.
Ken, since we're parliamentarians here...
If we have her, let's use her.
Once a motion's on the floor, can it be withdrawn? Because once it's on the floor, it's now in the possession of the committee.
Would you like a vote on the... the motion to withdraw the amendment?
Mr. Chair, with the agreement of the committee, any motion can be withdrawn.
That's what it like. We did ask for to see if there's a problem with that. But
that's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much for being here. Thanks for your help. We're going to go back then to the original motion to accept the rules for our committee. Is there any further discussion on adoption of the rules, committee rules? Hearing none. Is there any objection?
Yes. I'm a no.
Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mr. Chair, we are adopting the rule as it is, without any amendment.
Correct. Okay. Thank you, Representative. Please.
Aye.
No.
No.
Aye.
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 No.
Aye. The rules are adopted. Members, thank you for helping to educate all of us on the process as befits our committee, and thanks to our clerk for being here to answer questions.
At this point, I'm going to close our organizational meeting. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3601, and I'm going to ask Ms. Richardson to please review what this bill is all about for us, even though we have heard it and like it well.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3601 requires the Department of Education to establish the Oregon Farm to School and School Garden Program. It authorizes the State Board of Education to adopt rules for program administration. It permits the Department of Education to accept contributions for program duties. It requires the Department of Education to report the legislature on the program. It appropriates monies from the general fund to the department for the program. It declares an emergency as effective upon passage. It currently has a referral to Ways and Means, and I apologize if your staff measure summary does not reflect that there is no revenue impact of this measure. A fiscal statement has not yet been issued.
Thank you very much, Representative Kotek, welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thank you, Chair Buckley, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland. I will be brief because, first of all, I want to thank you. You spent a lot of time prior to coming back into session in February discussing this bill. You've been very generous with the amount of testimony you've had. I want to particularly thank your committee administrator for working on a lot of the details. You have passed on to the co-chairs a very lengthy memo that describes the urgency for this bill, the need for it. I think this is one of those things that is not only bipartisan, but fits what we're trying to do here in February, which is seize an opportunity to take advantage of what we've done in the Department of Agriculture in terms of a position to facilitate farm-to-school and school gardens. Now, to have a matching position in the Department of Education for the rest of the biennium is a smart move. I urge your support, and you've been supportive so far, so I hope that continues, and I'll leave it at that. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, Representative. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
We got the co-chair's report this morning, and they're preparing for a tough fiscal problem. Is there any way we can achieve the objectives of this bill without requiring additional funds into the Department of Education?
Chair Buckley, Representative Greenlink, thank you for the question. My understanding is no. You heard from the department, I believe, last time that the department's been collaborating as much as they can, given their current staffing at the department, to work in coalition to help facilitate farm-to-school and school garden throughout the state. But they really don't have enough positions, capacity to do the type of job that we now need to do, given that we have the position in the Department of Agriculture, who is stoking, if you were, the supply side of this conversation, but we don't have that technical assistance and capacity to deal with the demand side, which we want to build on the school side. So I think it would be challenging to reach the kind of outcomes we want if we don't fund this position.
I can follow up.
Please follow.
For example, we've heard about disappropriations. As opposed to killing a bill, if we do get in the position of killing it at Ways and Means, could we perhaps disappropriate half of the FTE from DOA and move it over to DOE?
Chair Buckley and Representative Greenlink, I don't know if that's you can do that budgetarily, but I think that would defeat the purpose, again, having a full-time position in agriculture, a full-time position in education, will get us where we need to be right now. And given the changing environment with school nutrition standards and all the things that were outlined in that memo, if we're going to do this right, this is the way to do it. And I think it's a great opportunity, timing-wise, to have this pass in February and not wait till 2009.
Thank you, Representative Clem.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Clem.
I just want to speak to that last point just briefly. The likely effect, if we didn't pass the bill, is the person who we hire, who already sold his share in the restaurant in Portland, is already working full-time at the Department of Ag, will continue working on the supply side, and large school districts will be able to work with him to get things going. Rural school districts won't, because they don't have a person who's a full-time food service manager and has multiple staff underneath them to deal with day-to-day while they're out trying to make contact with the person at the Department of Ag. So, you know, Portland and Salem, they'll work with the person at Ag. Other smaller school districts probably won't until 09 if we can get somebody at the State Department to help get it going on a statewide basis. And I think that's a reasonable guess at what the likely effect if we don't move the bill through is.
Thank you, Representative. Further questions?
Number one question.
Representative.
This the position is a permanent position or just a temporarily trying out position?
Chair Buckley, Representative Lynn, that's an excellent question. The way I've been approaching this bill is that this is a pilot for the second half of this biennium with the expectation that the department would have to come back to ask for the position again for the next biennium. And we did it that way because we really feel that there's a huge opportunity right now to take advantage of. And, of course, I would like to see it continue, but I think the outcomes we'll see will have to bear that out, whether that makes sense. But in the meantime, get the position on, try to do as much as we can in the last year of the biennium.
Okay, additional comment?
Representative.
I think this is the pilot program. Without funding, there will be no pilot program at all. And with this program, children could learn what's going on outside the urban area, and then it's make children healthy. I think this is very constructive. I think this is a good deal. With a small amount of money, we can get a lot more out of it.
Thank you, Representative. Further questions, Representative Kotek? Representative Kotek, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate your work on this. Chair, I'm going to butcher your last name. Marketsky? I'm sorry. My apologies.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Michelle Markiston Ratcliffe. I am the farm to school manager at EcoTrust. And actually, it seems like you've already had a good amount of dialogue on this. I was part of the coalition that brought you extensive testimony on January 23rd, and so I'll limit my remarks other than to be available to you if you had additional questions or need for clarification.
Mr. Chair, can I ask you a question?
Representative Griddick.
Do we automatically subsume the testimony from the interim committee into our record for this committee, or can we do something that does that?
That's an excellent question.
I would recommend that the chair instruct committee staff to enter it into the record.
I would like to instruct committee staff to.
Good move, Mr. Chair.
From the interim committee hearings. Thank you, Representative. Thank you for that question. Any questions for our witness? Yes. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your work on this proposal.
All right, thanks.
And we'll wish it luck. We also have John Chisholm.
Good afternoon, Chair Buckley and members of the committee. My name is John Chisholm. I'm the manager for the Physical Activity, Nutrition, and Arthritis Program at the Public Health Division in the Department of Human Services. And I'm here today just to talk about our support for 3601. The bill itself is very consistent with the recommendations in our Oregon Healthy Active Oregon Physical Activity and Nutrition Plan, and it also is consistent with recommendations to a report that we prepared for the Oregon Health Policy Commission in 2007. You might know that obesity is a concern of our program. It's a concern in many states throughout the country. The things that this would do would hopefully increase the consumption of fruits and vegetables among youth, and the consumption of fruits and vegetables in Oregon among youth has gone down since 2001, so this would be an opportunity to see that trend change. I didn't want to spend a lot of time. You have a copy of my testimony, so I'd be willing to answer any questions regarding the public health impact on 3601.
Thank you, Mr. Chisholm. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenman.
Other than the fact that you haven't deemed ketchup to be a vegetable yet. I was wondering whether you guys might have a staff position you could loan the Department of Education.
Unfortunately, the funding that we receive from the Centers for Disease Control speaks very specifically to what our staff are doing, and currently
we're not.
Currently, we don't have a staff position that would be able to assist with that. We do have a staff position that is involved with committees and groups with ICOTRUST, and we have we have ODE that serves on a committee that we help support, the Nutrition Council of Oregon, but we don't have a staff position that could actually support this directly.
Thank you for actually sincerely answering that question.
are there any other questions for Mr. Chisholm?
Any real questions?
Seeing none, thank you for being here. Thank you for your support of this legislation. Megan Moyer?
For the record, I'm Megan Moyer. I'm with the Service Employee International Union, Local 503. Chair Buckley, members of the committee, I will keep my comments brief, but wanted to speak in favor of this bill. Particularly, SEIU Local 503 represents the food and nutrition workers of the Portland Public School District. They provide 16,000 breakfasts a day, 20,000 lunches, and in some cases, dinners every single day. We are in support of this legislation because it improves the quality of the services that our members can provide to the children. They take great pride in the work they do, and this is an important effort to give them the ability to improve the quality of the food that they're serving the children of Portland. Any questions?
Thank you very much. Any questions?
I won't ask the same
question. Thank you, Mr.
No, there was
some blame. Portland Public Schools does not have anything to
do. I don't think so. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for supporting this legislation. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3601. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3601. I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the committee pass House Bill 3601. Did I do it right?
There you go.
Yeah, move House Bill 3601 to the floor, but do pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the committee on Ways and Means by prior reference, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Wilson has moved House Bill 3601 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that be referred to the committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? Representative Roldan.
You know, we've had lots of discussions, and I know that my friend to the has brought it up many times about how much a thing costs, and this one that we've kept the cost down to like $95,000. I would consider that maybe we send a letter requesting that they take off the Ways and Means referral and let us vote on it, because I think it's in that realm of what is a reasonable amount of money to do without in a regular session, and it's around that number. And we've had the discussion whether it should be 50 or 100 or whatever, and maybe it would be a good point for them to recognize that maybe they would want to remove that referral, because I think it would have it would be a good opportunity for us to vote on this on the floor. But I'm not sure that we can do that, but I just want to make sure that we at least have the discussion about that, because to me, this is one of those things that's really important, and it's not costing that much money, and it would be nice if it moved without having to go to Ways and Means. But
President Roman, I appreciate that comment, and I'll keep the discussion going here. Representative Crennel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I don't want this to sound like I don't support the bill, because I do. I know I supported it before when it was before us. But I guess it's kind of a rhetorical question in some respects, and that is this a piece of legislation that we really need to do? Because what currently stops a school district from going to their local farmers and buying their produce direct? What stops a local school district from going to their local farmers or the farmers in the area or the farmers across the state and cutting a deal to be able, the same kind of a deal that Burgerville cut, to be able to buy Oregon cattle? I don't think there's anything that prevents them from doing that, and it's unfortunate that they haven't just sort of taken the step to do that. So I guess that's a rhetorical question. I have to admit, though, and I, you know, if this thing, if we have to send it to Ways and Means, let's get it down there and let's twist the co-chair's arms or the co-arms chairs, whatever the, you know, but whatever we need to do. But I will tell you this, I was also angered this morning when I looked in the Oregonian, and I actually didn't get a chance to read the entire article, and maybe I would have settled down, but the headline really ticked me off when it said that basically schools have to offer fatty foods because they don't have enough money. I get so tired of hearing that crap.
because it just, money has become a number one excuse for just about everything that if a school district does or doesn't want to do something, money becomes the excuse. And I really get tired of hearing that. So, by sending this to Ways and Means and putting the money in the bill, we'll take away the excuse. Now, I suppose it could be argued that, you know, $95,000 isn't enough, $8.7 million isn't enough, probably $48.2 million isn't enough. I don't know, let's throw a couple billion at it. But the thing is that we can start whittling away at that money excuse by doing this. I support the bill, but I also don't think there's anything that keeps our districts from being able to go out and cut those kind of deals.
Representative, since you were seen between two former school administrators, I salute your bravery.
And working on my own license too.
That's right. Virtual lunches. I'd like to give President Robles a chance to respond.
I would love to. I'd also like to have a couple people come back to the table if we can I think they have some other information. But from an administrative perspective, oftentimes our smaller school districts contract out and do other kinds of things to have this stuff provided. And the paths through which people have to travel to get that produce from the farm directly in the school have many little little conditions that have to be met. And that takes either someone's time, which is money, or it takes a pathway to have been driven ahead of place. So other people have done it already, which I'm hoping that's what this bill is about, is to start developing those pathways that make it possible for a school district to not incur different liabilities and other kind of stuff when they buy things off the farm. And there are a whole lot of reasons why school districts, and I think there are some that have paved the way and have done some of that, but it is still not a common practice because of some of the fears that I think lie out there. And I think you can ask some other questions about, you know, how do you make sure you know the nutritional content and all those other kinds of stuff, because there's a whole lot of questions now around food service that have to be answered. And so does my dietitian have the ability to figure out how much of the food is in this product that I just bought from the farm? Can I assure that they are getting the daily amount of protein and carbohydrates and other things from this produce that came off the farm? They weren't necessarily trained to do that as the person cooking that food in the office. And so finding out those kind of things is going to be very, very important. And I hope that that's what part of the Department of Education and Agriculture are doing together to make that happen. So, but I would love to hear from
them. Thank you, Representative. If you'd reintroduce yourself and join the discussion, we'd be glad to hear your thoughts on this.
Great. Thank you. My name is Michelle Markison-Ratcliffe, again, the farm-to-school manager at EcoTrust. And just to speak directly to that point, that actually one of my roles is, quote, the benevolent broker. I say I'm the benevolent broker for Portland Public Schools, and actually it's a term that's caught on. There's a benevolent broker for Eugene, Corvallis. Someone's doing it down in Medford, Ashland, LeGrand, and Bend. You know, we say we're a benevolent broker, and what does that mean? That actually there's numerous things that are in the way of allowing a school, a food service director, to connect to their local farmer. And it's super complex, specifically depending on what local, state, or federal procurement regulations, like what red flag goes up based on how much they're purchasing. And that's just to get on the phone with the person. What specific formal requests for proposals have to go out or not have to go out. One thing Portland Public Schools has taken the lead in is trying to push those barriers in a very clear-cut legal way. And what they ran up against and why the position of Department of Agriculture was so key is they created this request for proposals. Farmers couldn't even fill it out. It was so complex. It was a 25-page legal document that arrived on people's doorsteps in March, which is exactly when everyone was in the field planting. So there's just this huge disconnect between, again, supply and demand side. So I hope that further answers your question.
Vice Chair Cobb.
I really appreciate the comment about school administrators. But before I was a school administrator, I was a cook. First job, not the first job I had in the school, that was being a mom and a volunteer, but the first job I officially got paid for in school was as a cook. And I assure you, the cooks do not have the time allocated, first of all, to do part of what this role would take care of. But the other thing that would happen, and that you happen to do this very innocently, this would become a resource where you can get a quality product. You don't want to be purchasing 100 pounds of broccoli from Farm X and know that it's got worms in it. And it's that simple. So this is a way to make sure that you have some level of quality control, easy access to that information so that you're not spending 3 hours of research when you should be cooking a turkey for Thanksgiving. It's all those things. It's what you do as a cook to ensure your product is in the door and ready for the children when they come to eat because they're hungry.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Plimm.
I just wanted to speak briefly, then do my conflicts of interest declarations.
Agreed.
I was an original author of, along with Tina, of three bills that were all related: farm to school, school garden, and I forget what other one was called. But the bottom line is the expensive way to do this, which would be a lot easier, is put in direct appropriation to the schools, and then you can earmark the money to go to Oregon products, like $10 million. I mean, that was our original sort of bill. If you don't do that, then you have to rely on their budgets and what they've got for school lunch money, and most of it is USDA, and it's illegal to put a preference for your own home state into your laws because it's federal taxpayer money. So this is our best way to try and develop the relationships so they can use whatever flexibility they can within the law or their own private foundation funds or other things. You know, we heard testimony about was it the Kaiser Foundation that gave the
Kaiser Permanente Community Fund at the Northwest Health Foundation.
Giving 7 cents per meal. That's really, in the end, probably what the state needs to do, and then we can say that all needs to come from an Oregon farmer, and it helps build the agricultural economy, and it certainly supplies fresh fruits and vegetables. Truer Brothers here in Salem said that they don't do business with the state of Oregon because they only operate on low bid, and they don't seem to be as focused on quality here, so they do business with the state of Georgia, I think, school system.
but not
Oregon. And so that's kind of what we're trying to get at. You know, in the long term, we may have to go the other route, but in the meantime, we will set up the relationships between farmers who want to do it and schools who want to do it, and maybe they're going to come back and say, it's great, but we can only do this one little dessert right now, and if we had more money, we could do everything but the meat or even the meat. So that's sort of where I'm at on it. Obviously, I'm in favor of the bill. My new conflict of interest, though, is on the 23rd, my little girl wasn't born yet, so I didn't do that. Now, on the 20th, she was born the next day after our hearing, so now I like to declare a conflict of interest that she might be eating some of these things. And my other conflict of interest is our Diamond Fruit Cooperative apparently did participate in some product that's already being in the Portland public schools, which they told me afterwards. I facetiously declared a conflict of interest in case our pairs ended up in something. Apparently, they may have.
Well,
so, really get that on the record.
Thank you, Representative. For the discussion, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Chair. Is part of this process whittling that form from 25 pages down to 3 or something like that, or is that going to be a part of this, or has that already been done?
That's,
is it going to be accessible?
That's happening over in our committee.
Okay.
It's in the works.
Chair Buckley, Representative Huffman, the specific request for proposal from Portland Public Schools, a number of things would be allowed if this position happened with 3601, and that is someone in the Department of Education who's used to working with food service directors in those number of school districts that actually trigger that official request for proposal, working directly with someone in the Department of Agriculture in their thing to coordinate that. So we have talked about how can we leverage other community organization things such as the Farmer Chef Connection or different places where people in the agricultural community may be, so that we as community members can also help farmers fill out those forms. Or, I don't think the school district they're bound to what their contractual needs are, forms that they would need to fill out. So again, just speaking to it as a benevolent broker, why it's so important for us to have a state position is that, again, going back to that equity issue, you've got the larger school districts are being covered, but who's helping sisters? I mean, actually, they call me too. But, how can you, of the 150 of the 200 something school districts is exactly, thank you, Vice Chair Comp, for saying that, is it's a cook manager. They don't even have food service directors. So they're buying the food, they're cooking the food, they're serving the food, and how they don't have time to develop that relationship. And so, in that way, while 3601 is related to last session, it's very distinct. It responds directly to things that have changed late, that arrived late in last session or happened since then. And the question of, is this a pilot? Yes, we hope it is rolled into what Department of Education is doing if it's deemed necessary after responding to these urgent needs right now.
Just a small comment concerning the some worms in the vegetable.
In the broccoli, yeah.
Whatever. And, you know, I'm coming from back from Korea, and when you got some worms in the vegetables, it's more expensive in Korea. Why?
So we should ship it over.
Because it's less pesticide.
It is less pesticide.
Some of them are cleaner and they look green, but sometimes it's not the best. The product.
So when you cook it, it floats to the top.
So, you know, I want to know also the worms have just more proteins. Actually, it is not all bad.
Thank you.
I apologize for using that analogy.
No apology there.
Are we trying to improve protein levels?
Any further discussion on the motion before us? Seeing no further discussion on the motion before us, I'm going to ask the clerk to call the roll.
And what's the motion?
The motion is to, well, we do have Representative Roblin's question.
Yes, we need to resolve that.
Okay, the question was whether we do need to refer this to Ways and Means. Do I have a sense of the committee there's strong support for this bill, and the committee would be fine with me postponing this vote and making that request to see if there it's possible?
Is it one day good day vote only?
No.
I mean, the issue is we could vote on it and then send a letter.
To ask
and if they choose to, they could pull it off on its way.
Right. It goes to the first.
Yeah, it goes up to the desk.
We usually the polite thing to do, my administrator says, is to ask first.
I know.
Can I make one comment concerning the Ways and Means issue?
Yes, please.
To me, at this time, sending to Ways and Means is not too bad.
Okay.
Because it's tamper proof. When it's passed out from Ways and Means, we know sure this is going to pass in the House. If we send directly to the floor, ask a lot of questions, why this escaped from Ways and Means, especially at this time, revenues might be going down, and the short of money, we might have some problem. But if we send it Ways and down, and twist their arms and pass it, we know this will pass in the House. So it's a true thought. So I don't mind sending it to Ways and Means.
Usually it's Representative Kremel who asks those questions in the House.
I'm taking over now.
I've been training them.
Sure, I strongly support this, but I think it's appropriate to send it to Ways and Means under the rules we've gotten from the co-chairs of Ways and Means, and there are going to be a lot of really good things competing with each other.
Very good. We're getting a consensus on that. I'm going to go ahead and we'll complete the vote on the motion as it exists, and I'll ask Matt to call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative
Huffman.
Aye.
Representative
Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Brogan.
Aye.
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 Aye. The motion carries. Good luck, House Bill 3601 in Ways and Means. Wish it our best.
Godspeed.
Thanks to all who worked on this.
Godspeed, yeah.
We close the work session on House Bill 3601. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 100, and we have our chancellor with us today. If he'd be so kind to join us, and it's interesting if he'd remind us what this resolution concerns.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 100 memorializes Martha Ann Dow. She was the former president of the Oregon Institute of Technology. If your staff measure summaries do not reflect it, please note that there is no revenue or fiscal impact from this measure.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Chancellor. Good to see you. Thank you for being here on this resolution.
Well, thank you, Chair Buckley and members of the committee. For the record, I'm George Pernsteiner with the Oregon University System, and I appreciate your inviting me to join you up here today. It's unfortunate, though, that I have to be here. But I am very pleased that you are considering honoring the memory of President Dow and honoring her family, which is what this resolution will do. I had the privilege of knowing President Dow for 15 years, both as provost and as president at OIT. And I can tell you, if you didn't already know, and I suspect most of you do, that she was a visionary. She could see the needs of Oregon. She could see around the corner better than anybody else I ever met. She knew what was coming before the rest of us did. And she could plan and she could execute to make sure that OIT was meeting the needs of the state with regard to workforce development in engineering and in healthcare long before any of us even knew there was a need. So she was a visionary. She was caring. President Dow spent a lot of time working with students, working with staff, working with faculty on a very personal basis. And I can remember various times in which she would call me in or call me up to have me then call one of her staff or students to congratulate them on something I'd never heard of, but which was important to the staff member or the student, and which President Dow took the time to ask me to intervene with that staff member or student. And that really takes a special person to take that kind of an effort. She was a leader. She transformed OIT. She kept it functioning smoothly, successfully, and in a financially prudent manner. She was visionary, yes. She was energetic, courageous, persistent, persuasive, inspirational, and humble. In short, I miss Martha Ann. I miss her a lot. Her sparkle, her optimism, her determination. She served all of us in Oregon well for 15 years, and I think it's appropriate, and I'm humbled by your willingness to consider this concurrent resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. Any questions, comments?
I'm going to if I propose merging OIT with OHSU, she'd be for it.
She might have had a different vision than yours. our friend Mr. had brought one of the publications that was recently put out by OIT that does have quite a... You might have received this already in the mail. It really has a wonderful article on Martha Ann Dow. She could get things done. That's why everyone likes. She got things done. Any further discussion or any? Does anyone else want to testify on this? Absolutely. Yes, please.
Did you check with them? I don't know what's in the pencil here. In the back.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I did sign up. My name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm here for the Policy Committee of the American Association of University Women of Oregon and as part of the Advocacy Corps. The American Association of University Women proudly come today to support this resolution honoring the life of Martha Ann Dow. Not only was Martha president of OIT, she was a longtime member of the American Association of University Women, having served in Montana as a local branch president and being very active before she came to Oregon. At OIT, she served as the college and university rep for OIT for AUW, and in that capacity, she was in direct support and contact with our association, which is a national organization, 27 years old now. She got the university to be a member. We have individual members, we have members at large, and then we have college and university members. And she took the advocacy for women and girls that AUW espouses and moved OIT in that direction as well. During her tenure, she co-sponsored three conferences called Transitions. These conferences are for women who are thinking about going back to school. A college campus nowadays is no longer like the college campus that many of us attended when we graduated from high school, went directly to college. College campuses have returning students, some of them with gray hair, some of them with a few gray hairs, but you know, they look a lot different, and Martha Ann knew about that, and with the Klamath Falls branch, sponsored three times these transition conferences at OIT. She was supportive of her faculty. She was a biologist and understood women in college and universities in science and supported that. And I would just like to read a little excerpt from one of the OIT faculty who is also an AUW member who, on a very short time frame, when I saw this last night, sent me some information. Sherry said she was always so proud of AEUW and our mission. It is really hard to put in words all that she meant to me and the difference that she made in my career and life. Sherry also shared with me that the Oregon Women in Higher Education just this last month, I think on the 25th, honored the life of Martha Ann Dell with their service award in appreciation of her efforts to support women in higher education. So this is one of the reasons why AUW is proud of our members and especially proud of Martha Ann Dell.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you so much. Thank you for bringing this together on short notice and joining us today. Greatly appreciated. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this resolution? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on HCR 100, and I'm going to open up a work session on HCR 100, and I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair?
Vice Chair Cobb?
Mr. Chair, I move HCR 100 to the floor with to be adopted recommend. To the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Kampf has moved House Concurrent Resolution 100 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there discussion?
Take and pass.
How's that different than do pass? What's it? How's that different than do pass?
I know, I wanted to say, I started saying do pass. So
resolutions are adopted. Seeing no other discussion, is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. I'm going to ask Representative Garrard if he would like to carry this on the floor, being that he represents the Klamath Falls District, and we'll take it from there. Thank you very much, members, for your attention and support of that resolution. I'm going to close the work session on HCR 100. I'm going to open up a public hearing on HB 3600, and Kristen, if you'd be so kind as to remind us yet again what we're dealing with here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3600 permits school districts to request a waiver from the Department of Education to administer an assessment other than the nationally normed assessment contracted to be administered to all students in grade 10. Requires the Department of Education to grant a waiver under certain circumstances. Permits school districts to receiving the waiver to receive funding for 1 year from funds set aside for the contract. It prohibits such funding from exceeding per student amounts spent on the contract. It specifies that the State Board of Education will adopt rules for waiving the assessment for specific groups of students. It declares an emergency is effective upon passage. A couple interesting things to note. It did come with a referral to Ways and Means. The Speaker's office has agreed that that can be rescinded. There is not, I believe, in your packets the fiscal impact statement, but there is an indication from LFO that there is no fiscal impact. You also have a dash one before you. Want me to quickly chat about that? The dash one removes the contractor from the process of granting waivers for specific groups of students. It specifies that the 2008-2009 academic year is the 1 year for which districts with an existing contract, with a contract other than the one selected by the department, may receive funding. And it removes the conditions under which the department must grant waivers.
Thank you very much. We have Ozzie Rose who signed up to testify.
The lack of people sign up, maybe I should have stayed in my chair. For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose. I'm with Martinez & Sons, and we represent ACT. We, as I've shared with you all before, support the position that's in the 3600 with the amendments that allows the waiver for districts for 1 year who are already in this type of testing. And I shared with you before, 14 or so districts are using the ACT product. They're testing between 18 and 20% of the kids, not only in the 10th grade, but in the 8th, 9th, and 11th grade. And we believe that the debate, you do this for 1 year, and then you can have the debate and let the school districts in here and share with you why they think one or the other is the best for their school district. There hasn't been a lot of input from the local districts on this. And so we encourage you to pass the amendment. It's a one, I think it's very clear now that it's 1 year, and I know some of you were concerned about that. And then let the districts share with you what they think during the 2009 session. make one other point. The districts who are out there testing already are ahead of the state and its efforts to do this kind of testing. They're ahead of your decision to do this kind of testing. And I think that you ought to be real careful about pulling the rug back out from under them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Any questions? Thank you very much. Members, there was a letter from the State Board. I hope you all received a copy of it. That can be emailed me. It should be in your packet. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill or the amendment? Marky.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Marquis, representing the College Board. I wasn't planning on testifying. I think everybody here heard my testimony at the last hearing. I do just want to point out one thing. On the waiver process, which we have been opposed to, I just want people to understand that the way this is drafted now, it could potentially bring in more different types of assessment companies rather than the two that everybody's been hearing about. I don't know what kind of complications, if any, that brings up with the Department of Education. But by not tying it back to the original criteria, you're expanding the how broad of search we are talking about on assessment companies. The other thing I just want to point out is that right now, even in today's world, we have districts offering either ACT's product or the College Board's product, but you have several students that are taking both tests now, no matter what high school they're at. I know from our standpoint, the PSAT, I think, is administered in over 300 high schools in the state, some of which are the same as what ACT is talking about today. So you know students are taking both of these tests already, and I don't see a harm if we're just talking about 1 year and then readdressing this in 09, what the harm would be if students took two tests in those districts, whoever they're using a test other than what the department takes. I just think that it's a student's decision, which the legislation already allows for that opt-out. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
So, Mr. Chair.
So this current bill as proposed is just a one-year trial base.
That's correct.
And did I hear correctly you are opposing this bill?
No. It isn't a one-year trial. It's an ingrained program, but it allows one year of waiver for an individual approval.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, if I can just... you weren't here at the last hearing when we talked about this.
Yeah.
The RFP for this process has already been released. So we have contractors bidding on this currently, as the way the legislation passed last session to allow one contractor statewide. And I think our client feels it's a little unfair to change the rules of that RFP in the bidding process. Right now people are bidding as if they're going to give the test for all students and, as the previous witness just talked about, right now they're looking at potentially, if my company or my client was awarded the contract, maybe as many as 20% of the students would be exempt out of that next year. That would greatly change on a per-student basis, or it potentially could change on a per-student basis what you would charge, because you're talking about dropping from 40,000 students in the 10th grade down to 20% less than that. So the pricing per student potentially could go up or vary due to that aspect.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I was not able to attend last meeting, but my just a common sense approach is just the 1 year, and then I'm not deeply concerned that the not fair, whatever, but I'm more concerned what's the best for the student and for the district. And so instead of one school, that one entity controls the most of it, diversifying and the more opportunity to the other students, this brings more competition in the data result, as far as I'm concerned.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, I agree that the student and the student's parents should be the ones that determine whether or not they're taking a state test or any test, and that's why in the current legislation that passed last session, it allows for any student or in consultation with their parents or guardians to exempt out of the state test. So I think if you were in a situation where the department contracted with one testing company, a district was offering a separate test, that parent and guardian starting, if they did not want them to take the additional state test, could opt out of the test and only be taking one.
Okay, follow-up question. So how many students currently opt out? Is it easier for them to opt out, or what's the current situation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, this has not gone into effect yet, and the first testing will be done in the 08-09 school year. That's why we're currently in a bidding process. So I can't tell you the current situation because it hasn't happened yet. I think that's why if we let this play out 1 year, look at how it is going and how it went through administering this program, then we address this in 09. If there are problems, we would know what they are then at least.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any further questions? Representative Whitman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marquis, do we know, and maybe Mr. Rose too, do we know of other testing companies that are involved in Oregon schools now? Are the students taking any other tests? Miller test? Miller analysis used to be?
Roblin test?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wisnitz, there are other assessment companies. I don't know how many assessment companies meet all the criteria that's laid out in the original bill that passed. I think we'll find that out as folks bid on the proposal, on the RFP that is out there. I think that the way that the original criteria is written, it probably limits it to potentially two companies. But by taking that criteria out, you are broadening the scope of who would be eligible in the waiver process.
By taking
Mr. Kremel.
Mr. Chair, I just want to clarify something. By taking what language out, we open it up for other.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kremel.
Still requires a nonprofit. Right?
Mr. Chair, if you Representative Kremel, if you look at the waiver process on page 2, lines 8 through 10, the waiver never refers back to the original criteria on page 1 of what the contractor for the state must be able to do. All we say is for students taking a college entrance exam that would prepare a student a practice for college entrance exam. Rather than, if you look on the first page, in the existing language where you look at lines 9 through 23 or somewhere in there, there's a whole list of criteria in which the state contractor must be able to do to bid the RFP. The waiver would not be required to meet any of that criteria. It would just need to be provide practice for students taking a college entrance exam. And I believe that there are other assessment companies out there that could do that but might not be able to meet all the other criteria in the legislation.
Mr. Chair. I believe Miller's. I haven't heard of Miller analogies being a college entrance. I know that for graduate school, they generally are used that one and GRE graduate record exam, which I think happens to be owned by SAT, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, I have some questions for Dr. Costi if we can pull him up.
Glad to pull him up. In just a minute. I think that we've checked in. Everyone wanted to testify as well, and Ms. Costi will come up. Any additional questions?
So, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. So, Matt, are you suggesting then that the language on lines 8 through 10 on page 2 should be eliminated?
Mr. Chair, I believe that a waiver process is not, or Mr. Chair, Representative Kremel, I believe a waiver process is not necessary because I think no matter who the department contracts with this year to administer a test next year, if there is a district out there using the other assessment company, I believe that will continue to take place. And if a student wishes not to take both tests, then they could opt out on their own. I think that that's a student's option to do so. But I think if you're having a waiver process, that it should probably be linked to the original criteria. I don't know how the department exactly is going to, if a waiver process is what the legislature ends up doing, I don't know how the department is going to keep track of that. I don't know, because the intent of the original legislation is my understanding that all students would have the ability to take the test. And by putting in a waiver process, and you have students moving back and forth from district to district, I don't know how the department if at all, would keep track of those students to make sure that they would have the opportunity to at least take one of the tests. And if that's the case, if that's what they're going to do, I think that would require some additional funds.
Okay. Further follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Representative Cremel.
I noticed on in subsection C on page 2, starting on line 11, and it talks about doing a waiver if the entity in which the school district is contracted administered an assessment to at least 95% of grade 10 students. What if, if I'm reading that correctly, if 95%, let's say a school district contracted with SAT to take the PSAT, but only 85% of the students took the test, unless we're requiring that as part of the state assessment that we currently do, which is a question I'll ask Dr. Kosky later, but unless we're doing that, how do we
We're deleting that
part. In the amendment, that section gets deleted, Mr. Chair, Representative Cromwell.
Never mind, Mr. Chair.
But to speak to that, I think the idea there was, and I believe the language came from Representative Compton and a work group early on, was that if a district was offering assessment to at least 95% of their students, they were trying to make sure that all their students had the ability to take that test, and I think that's where the language came from.
Vice Chair Compton.
Hopefully a clarification, and I apologize to the committee. My head's a little wacko today with the migraine. But I don't know that we answered Representative Lynn's question, and I think there's a little bit of possible confusion, and maybe it's just me in my hearing, that the waiver that is being addressed in this amendment is for a whole school district. For a student to not have to take the test, all they have to do is basically write a statement and have their parents sign it and say that they do not wish to take the test. And so it is, in fact, probably called a student waiver, but the one we're talking about here is a district waiver.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Representative Greenland.
May I appreciate your help, and we've had this discussion before, so I'm going to probably just clarify this. As I understand, you've got you're stating two sets of problems. One set of problems being that you issue an RFP for 100%, it may turn out to be 80%, and that may change the conditions. The other is this thing about tracking students and a variety of issues around here, and I think those are the main two things you've raised, although I may have missed one. Which of these really set your hair on fire? I mean, what?
I didn't.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, I think the original intent of the legislation was to allow a test, an assessment test, to be given to students that might not otherwise take this test, to identify them for more rigorous classes, advanced placement, college readiness types things. Students that wouldn't necessarily take PLAN or the PSAT because, for whatever reason, they don't think that they're that type of student. So the whole idea was to allow all students to take that test. By allowing a waiver process and by allowing a school district to determine whether or not they're going to take whatever test the state ends up taking, I think is a potential problem. But also, when you have a student, if you go beyond that and you allow a waiver process, and now you have a student out there that is moving from District A to District B that offers a different test, I think it's important to allow to make sure that those students have that same opportunity. Tests are given on different days. I mean, my client, the College Board, offers a test on a certain day. I believe ACT offers their test on a different day. So you're going to have some movement between students. Granted, it may not be a lot, but it may be the exact type of student that you're looking to identify to allow to take this type of assessment test. So I think it's important for that tracking to be done, but I think it's very unclear if a waiver process were to happen, if it would ever happen. I don't think there's money in this bill to allow that to happen.
Especially if it's a one-year process.
Especially if it's a one-year process.
Thank you, Representative Rebel.
I guess the question I want to ask, so I clarify this in my own mind, the way this is written with the exemption and the removal of the others with the amendments, basically what you're saying is that there is no requirement that they've ever given a different test before, so they could go out and pick any new test they wanted. Number two, that because they've chosen the waiver requirements, they don't have to abide by any of the requirements on the previous page, i.e., the contractor must be able to display item IM analysis of student performance. The contractor may assessment, career assessment, online exploration, or college. They don't have to do that because it's not explicit in the waiver. So if I understand you right, what we're saying is if they choose the waiver, they can pick anybody that does one thing. It predicts what you're going to do in college. That's the only requirement in the waiver. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, Representative Roblin, that's very close to what I'm saying, and I think predict is maybe even a strong word, but it says provide practice for a student taking a college entrance exam. And I believe that there are assessment companies out there that will tell you that they can give practice for a college entrance exam that can't meet all the rest of the criteria.
Okay. So they would be eligible for the waiver?
They would be eligible for the waiver, but would not be eligible for the statewide assessment bidding process that is going on right now.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, why are we deleting Section C? 2C.
Representative Greenick, in previous discussions on this, it was testified to the fact that 95% of grade 10 students is a virtually impossible
just too high a bar
level to meet.
So we're not changing the bar, but we're deleting the provision.
That is my understanding. We can get further clarification from the department. Again, just to remind the committee, the department would be writing rules about the waiver process, and I would be rather amazed if they did not include the intent of the legislation behind the rules that they wrote, that the department would be trying to be consistent with the intent of this legislation. But we can elaborate on that if the committee feels we need to.
If I'm going to consider it, I don't want the waiver, explicit waiver language, to eliminate all the rest of it. And when I was first having this conversation, it was my understanding that we were really only trying to grandfather in for 1 year those schools that are already doing something. By taking out that other section, we also take out the idea that there was any previous commitment to any test. And so that's what opens up this waiver deal, as I see it. And that both of those things concern me.
I would be glad to work with you and work with the council to tighten that up. That is the intent of the amendment, is to grandfather in for 1 year the school districts are already using the other testing.
And couldn't we achieve that by, rather than deleting line 11 through 13, simply deleting the words on line 12 of an assessment? No. I'm sorry, simply leaving the at least 95%. So as contracted, administered an assessment to grade
10 students.
Simply deleting the at least 95%.
Right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, if I may, the way this is set up right now, you have two standards. You have in sub 2 A, lines 5 through 7, you have a waiver process there set up that is a discretionary waiver that the department will determine. In sub C, on the lines 11 through 14, you have a mandatory waiver that if this criteria is met, then they will grant a waiver.
Right.
So you have two separate waiver processes happening as the bill is drafted now.
That is correct.
So the first waiver on lines 5 through 7 don't address what you're talking about at all.
So line 8 covers the waiver. 2A covers the waiver.
Right, without specific language to narrow the focus at all.
But the assumption would be in line 2A that they have to, it's to pay for an assessment that's already being administered. Is that the language on line 6? Comes up.
That's a good clarification, or if I can, Ms. Markey, I do think that we are talking about receiving funding on line 5, which is something we want to bring up with the department. And again, this is a permissive. The department may grant a labor line school district receive funding. And then in lines 11 through 14, as you point out, Representative, it talks about a mandatory waiver given a certain a list of requirements. However, even under the mandatory waiver, there's no guarantee funding would happen. Are you following? Is that clear?
No, I understand. I understand both of those, but it would still, the language ought to be in A or in C. That's, you're granting a waiver not for any test, but only for a test that's
correct.
Currently being administered.
Yes.
For the same purpose.
Agreed. Representative Rilden.
Yeah, my only question is, we only have a May grant in this particular proposal as it's done. So they may not rent any, right? And then we'd have one simple test and we'd be back and we'd be where we could be.
Except for, it does further on say it shall grant a waiver.
Under C.
Only in
C. But C is the one we are eliminating, right?
Right.
Yes.
That's the proposal.
Right. Yep.
So currently the department could just say we've got a proposal out there, it meets the requirement, we don't want to waive anybody, and it's...
And that's their prerogative.
And that's their prerogative. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Roland, just on that issue that was brought up at the last hearing on the receiving funds portion, I think the department testified that they weren't sure after the contract was awarded if there would even be funds for another district to receive. And I just remind the committee of that.
Correct. Should we give Mr. Bennett a chance to come and hack away at this too?
Thank you.
I was going to talk about the broccoli and the worms. Missed your opportunity.
Missed my chance.
Well, then, heck, why not? Testing. My name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Mr. Chairman, just wanted to rise in support of the amendments, although with the discussion that's going on, the amendments get more interesting, but certainly no less supportable.
Okay.
And the direction you're going, I don't want to join in wordsmithing this because I'm not facile enough to do it, but I do think that if you do find yourselves caught up in the question of funding and whether or not districts can continue programs they're currently doing for a year, set the funding aside. Let us continue our programs that we're doing so that we at least have a one-year phase-in on this thing.
Mr. Chair, hopefully, could the witness restate that? Yes, I'm sure I heard what you just said.
I think if you set aside the issue of receive funding in order to move this along to allow districts that are currently doing a program, set it aside. Don't goof up our programs in the process of arguing over funding. That's not the issue here. The issue here is trying to have an orderly operation in districts that currently have testing programs that actually work. We'll look at your program and see how it works in a year, and we'll have then some comparison. But I sure wouldn't let funding get in the way of this thing. Districts are already paying for this. I don't want to shock anyone with that comment about funding. this is really too important to be set aside.
My issue, and I think we need to clarify what we're doing. I just had an unfortunate experience where some extraneous words in a bill created a $165 million fiscal. Which I'm going to try to deal with this afternoon. But I think our intent is to allow a one-year waiver for schools that are already doing something that does this job.
Right. That's great.
And we ought to make sure that whatever we say here does
that. Yeah, and please don't let... I do worry that this funding... Because there isn't... You've got this finite pot of money.
Right.
You've got this RFP out. You've got all this stuff underway. This would do nothing but confuse the issue, and districts are already committed to their program, or they wouldn't continue down this road.
Sure.
If they're not committed, they'll take the funding and do whatever it is going on in what we see right now as a pilot program. And then let's get back together in the regular session and talk about what we found. It'd just be, I think, real helpful. We still have concerns. Every time I bring this up with school administrators, there is this ongoing question of why grade 10, but I don't want to go into that now. It just is this, why grade 10? What possesses them?
As opposed to what?
Grade 11. I know, and I got to go, why grade 11?
I'd go grade 9.
Yeah, I thought maybe...
No, that's exactly right. And that discussion will be interesting, but in a regular session. It's just a matter of not disrupting an existing system is all we're asking you, in those districts that have really some pretty good programs going. And then we can really have a good discussion next session.
Representative Roland.
question, and then I could answer why 10.
I'll bring in an 11.
I mean, I can explain why it's better than 11. So, I mean, there's some pretty good reasons for that. But from my perspective, on this, the question I have for you is that are districts upset? I mean, you've just mentioned that it isn't about the money, because they've already got a budget. They're planning on doing this, so it's not really about the money. So is it about they don't want to take up another day of student time? Because otherwise they could have two opportunities for those kids if they're a different one. So those students would have the option, and many of the students in our state take both these tests anyway, because they have different applications, and they like the best score, and which whatever shows up best for me, and they test slightly differently. So there are kids that have differences, and so
I encourage them to. And Representative Roblin, I think you're leaving the door open for districts that want to offer two tests. I don't think that's mutually exclusive here. It's where a district has a plan. They have it built into whatever their curriculum planning is, their assessment planning, their outcomes, any kind of outcomes determinations they've made. And they're just not interested in giving up that extra day. There is, as you know, a substantial enough amount of testing going on. But that doesn't mean there won't be districts that won't take advantage of the opportunity to let students take a shot at an additional opportunity. I just think you'd be far more flexible if you'd follow that approach at this point. And I don't think, if it does, I apologize to my colleagues in the teaching or in the testing industry lobby, but I don't think they're going to object to this approach either. I don't think anyone has a problem with the more tests, the merrier here. So presumably their clients' purposes are served as well. It certainly would help us out in just rationalizing our way through this. So we just ask you to approach it that way.
Thank you, Mr. Minner. I greatly appreciate your time and focus on this. Members, we're going to carry this over till tomorrow. Dr. Cossey, thanks for coming, and we look forward to talking with you on this tomorrow. Ledge Council is here and has heard the entire discussion, so we will continue to try to get something on paper that clarifies the intent that we've all been talking around this afternoon. Appreciate your time and your comments, members. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on this bill and close the committee hearing for today.